Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You want the upper hand in your fantasy football leagues? Then you've come to the right place. You're listening to the Upper Hand Fantasy Podcast. Now, here's your host, Faraz Siddiqui and Zach Rizzuto.
Welcome back to the show. Upper Hand Fantasy Podcast. The playoff picture is all set. We've updated our post-2023 Dynasty rankings. Okay, that's up at upperhandfantasy.com. But we're going to talk about some risers and some follows in this episode, kind of centered around the teams that have made the playoffs, some teams that got knocked out in Week 18. First of all, Zach, I enjoyed the Bills-Dolphins game personally. Like, it wasn't this high-scoring bonanza, but like it had a playoff feel to it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, the Bills, you know, they already knew that they were in the playoffs because the Jaguars lost. By the way, what a collapse by the Jaguars. They lost five of their last six games. The only game they won in that span was against Carolina. Okay. They went into Tennessee, right? And the Titans were very happy to play spoiler because the Jags still had a chance to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's funny. I look back, and the Jaguars aren't any strangers to this, you know, losing out of the playoffs in Week 18. I think it was 2 years ago. Not last year, obviously, because they made the playoffs. Like you said, they beat the Titans last year to get into the playoffs. I think they took the division then, and that put them in the playoffs. But the year before, they needed a win against the lowly Colts. Do you remember that? That was the dark days, I think, of Carson Wentz, the Carson Wentz era. I think that's what it was. I'm not sure. I forget who it was. But the Colts came in. The Jaguars were favored. I think the Jaguars were at home. They just need to beat the Colts at home, and they lost. So that's what I'm kind of comparing this to. It just reminded me a whole lot of that game. You know, just overall, the Jaguars, just a disappointment this season. You know, obviously, in terms of real life, but also fantasy football. Like Trevor Lawrence, like, what happened to him? You know, he was supposed to take the next step. You know, he was supposed to possibly break into that top five. We talked about that this offseason, and now who knows what next year is going to look like. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to go somewhere. He's not going to be on the team. He's not going to be the starter or anything like that. But like, did Lawrence take a step forward at all from last season? I mean, he's stuck in neutral, if you ask me. Like, nothing changed.
Yeah.
I thought we'd have him easily in the stock up category with the Jaguars giving him his number one receiver. You know, Calvin Ridley came in. We thought that would make the big difference. He didn't pan out exactly like we thought he might have. He was looking good in training camp, just didn't use him. But he looked worse, Trevor Lawrence, down the line this season than he did last season. Like, let's put it this way. Lawrence was ascending in the second half of last season, and this season, now he's descending. Like, granted, he's dealing with a lot of injuries, you know, this season. That's going to affect his play. He was missing Christian Kirk for a couple games, you know, but that's one player. Lawrence had 14 total touchdowns and two interceptions in seven games after the Jaguars' bye last year. This year, he had 15 total touchdowns and 10 interceptions in eight games after the bye. So if you had Lawrence on your team, you know, you're coming into the year in Dynasty, you're thinking, I'm set. I have Trevor Lawrence, his quarterback. He's going to come into the year, and he's going to be top five by the end of 2023. Now here we are at the end of 2023, and he didn't take any kind of step forward compared to last year. He actually finished lower than he did last year in terms of cumulative points. He's a QB 13 this year after being just a QB 8 in 2022. So he's going in the wrong direction. I'm not saying that he's a stock down, but the fact that he hasn't moved is really disappointing.
Trevor Lawrence is outside my top 15 dynasty quarterbacks. And this is not something that I thought I would be saying after this season. I thought, you know, with Calvin Ridley, you know, with the weapons that they have, he would have been able to ascend, and you know, with Doug Peterson also,
yeah,
you know, but Doug Peterson also
continuity, yeah,
you know, some questions there as well. Like, they lost Christian Kirk, and it went downhill from there. You know, that offense hasn't been the same.
Obviously,
Trevor Lawrence too. You know, he's been banged up, you know, all year. But mm-hmm. even in the beginning of the season when he was healthy, he didn't really show the signs. And, you know, this is an interesting situation. You know, somebody who was considered one of the best quarterback prospects, you know, in recent memory. Now he's in a situation where we don't know what to do with him. And he's kind of like in Dynasty, you kind of don't know what to do. You hold them, do you sell them? You know, what do you do? And for me personally, if anybody is holding out hope for Trevor Lawrence, and I think there's reason to, me personally, yeah. I would sell it. I would sell them if I can get the good price. You know, if I can get the right price, I would. You know,
mm-hmm. I think the right price is important. Like, I'm not selling him for cheap. I'm not saying like give up on Trevor Lawrence or anything like that. But like compared to what you expected to have, like you thought this was gonna be a top five guy. I'm not saying you know, Faraz. I'm not saying you had this, but like if you had him, you were thinking that you were gonna have this great quarterback by the end of the season, and you're set. Now there's a question mark. It's like, okay, I have a middling guy at quarterback now at this point. And the fantasy production wasn't there this whole season. You know, he had a couple of good games where he had those rushing touchdowns, but outside of that, it's like, were you excited to have him in your lineup? Like, he was very middle of the pack.
Who would you rather have in Dynasty right now, Baker Mayfield or Trevor Lawrence?
Oh, my God. That's a tough question. I think that Trevor Lawrence has more in front of him yet than Baker Mayfield, just because where they're at in their careers. I think Baker Mayfield's going to be fine these next few years. You know, I think he's still obviously going to be somebody that's starting in the league. I think Trevor Lawrence still has that shot at upside, where Baker Mayfield, he's played a lot better this season, but I don't think his upside's close. And like I said, Trevor Lawrence is just a bit younger. I'm still going to go with Trevor Lawrence, but the fact that we're having that discussion, we're asking that question, just paints the picture about how far we've fallen with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, 100%. Now, Travis Etienne definitely improved his dynasty stock this year. Only 35 catches last year, but that went all the way up to 58 this year. He's been solid, right? Like, nothing really standing out in terms of efficiency metrics, you know, outside of his elusiveness, which has been above average, making guys miss at the fifth highest rate among running backs with 200 or more carries this year. But other than that, things like yards after contact, yards per route run, you know, middle of the pack, among qualifying running backs, he's still a top 10 dynasty running back, no doubt. But more so because, you know, he's being used as a workhorse. He's still young. He upped his production in the receiving game, kind of earning more targets. He'll be 25 at the end of January, and he's a solid running back, right? And that's kind of the formula right now to be a top 10 dynasty running back. Nothing is really leaping off the page with him, but his age, his role, and his projected role next year kind of keeps him in that top 10.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense. All of those factors that you mentioned combined to make, you know, just pretty much he's a default top 10 guy. But I'd feel a lot better about Travis Etienne, you know, going in the offseason if he didn't have this quiet back half of the season like he did. You know, like suddenly after the bye, he just fell completely off the map. Earlier in the season, he had let's count it up, 1, 2, 3, 4. Four straight top five finishes before going into the bye. After that, he didn't have a single top five finish. It's like, what the heck happened? And you look, obviously, we just talked about the Jaguars, how everything kind of just went south. You know, nothing really worked. Quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, having a hard time. The receivers were all over the place. It's going to be tough to succeed in that type of environment where the offense just falls off a cliff. But Travis Etienne, he only had two top 12 finishes in the last how many games of the season since their bye. Like, it just makes me a little bit nervous about him moving forward. Earlier in the season, we saw touchdowns were there. I think that this is a situation with Travis Etienne where if the offense can get corrected, I think they absolutely have the pieces in place to correct the offense overall. I think that Travis Etienne is going to be a big part of that, getting him back involved. They cut down his rushing workload a lot in the second half of the season with Trevor Lawrence injured. Made no sense to me, really, when you look at it. It's like, okay, your quarterback gets hurt. You think you'd put more on the running back. They didn't do that. So I think if they go back to Travis Etienne, he has that upside, and that's going to keep him as a top 10. I don't think we have to worry about him, but I'd feel a lot better about it if he didn't have that quiet, you know, end to the season. And it just didn't sit right with me. His only good game, pretty much, came against the Panthers, who were abysmal against the run.
And by the way, when the Jaguars traded for Calvin Ridley, they traded a 2023 fifth rounder plus a conditional fourth rounder in this year's draft for him. But since he hit certain thresholds, like he hit his reception number, he went over 1,000 yards receiving, that just turned into a third round pick in this year's draft. And if the Jags re-sign him, it turns into a second round pick. So I'm not sure the Jaguars are going to be doing that. Like, my guess is that they let him go, they let him hit the open market, and they draft the receiver, you know, maybe try to sign someone in free agency, because if Ridley leaves, they desperately need a perimeter wide receiver, right? Yeah. And they could be in line to draft somebody in this relatively deep wide receiver class. So,
yeah,
you know, Ridley finishes as a wide receiver 3 in fantasy points per game. He was one of the most inconsistent wide receivers out there this year, but he did help you win some weeks if you had him in your lineup at the right time.
Yeah, and I think if not for the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson, you know, the Jaguars, I think they would have been the disappointments of the year, you know, fantasy-wise in real life. Tony Pollard's close, but if you look at just a team and what we were expecting for the Jaguars, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, all these guys, Evan Ingram's the only one that came through. The rest of them, they fell short of expectations, I think. Travis Etienne, maybe there's an argument. But the passing game, tough. Calvin Ridley, like, do you remember the discussions we were having about him when we saw that clip come out and he looked like 10 times faster than, who was it, Zay Jones or something like that? Like,
right.
He looked 10 times faster running the routes in training camp. We were like, this guy, he could be a top five receiver. And it was all pointing that way. He was a top five receiver the last time we had seen him on the field before that. So it's like there was an argument to be made there, but just didn't pan out. So it was really disappointing. Like I said, if not for the Jets and Aaron Rodgers, that whole situation, I mean, they would be the disappointments of the year.
All right, back to some of these playoff scenarios. So the Bills were 5-5, and then they went on to win four straight games going into Miami. No, more than that. That doesn't make any sense. But they were 5-5 at one point in the season. Towards the end of the year, they ended up winning four straight going into Miami. They ended up getting it done. They won the division, and it's serving them well because they get to have a home game this weekend against the Steelers. So make that six straight games to go to the divisional round. The Dolphins just couldn't get anything going in the second half of that game. And now they have to go into Kansas City, going to be an extremely cold night. Remember, these guys are from Miami. Okay. Yeah. And now the Dolphins are at risk of not making it to the divisional round. The Chiefs are favored in that game by 3 points. You know, I know that. So just real quick on the Bills now. Right, we have Stephon Diggs. We talked about him a couple times. You know, he had a better game, you know, in this game, you know, not lighting it up, but like, you know, I think we won't be as down on him as a lot of people might be going into next season, because he'll probably still be their true number one wide receiver. But there are some questions around, you know, who's going to be behind him, right? Obviously, they have Dalton Kincaid. He's their future tight end. You know, Dawson Knox there isn't ideal, but I think Kincaid's going to end up coming through for the Bills next year, kind of playing a little bit more, even if Dawson Knox is healthy. But besides Stephon Diggs at wide receiver, didn't really have a whole lot.
No. And Gabe Davis, you know, we know he got that injury in that game. He picked up, I think they're calling it a PCL or whatever, might cause him to miss this next game. And we saw who step up in his place, you know, and this is a guy that you were on from the Senior Bowl 2 years ago, Khalil Shakir. He comes in, six catches, 105 yards, obviously scoreless, but still not anything to sneeze at. He's been kind of doing this the whole season where he just pops up and he's making big plays. You know, he's catching passes, doing what he needs to do, being dependable, where Gabe Davis hasn't really been that. And then you turn around and you look and you're like, well, Gabe Davis is in the last year of his contract. Like, are the Bills going to bring him back? I don't think they want to pay him a whole lot of money, you know, based on what he's contributing to the offense. If Stephon Diggs is going to be around too, you know, rely on him. That might open things up a little bit for a guy like Khalil Shakir. I'm not saying that he's going to come out and he's going to be the number two from the start. You know, I think Dalton Kincaid has a better shot at that, being the number two target in the offense, say maybe if Gabe Davis leaves. But he's certainly going to be relevant, Khalil Shakir, next season, but if Gabe Davis would go, this is a chance for him to appreciate, you know, a ton in terms of his dynasty value. He could really move up, because what we've seen from him is it's been good. You know, it's not like he's coming on the field and he's looking like Kadarius Toney and he's dropping these passes. And that's another guy that you might have been stashing. You might have been stashing Kadarius Toney, like, okay, here's a chance. He's with the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, good quarterback to be tied to. If you look at what these two guys have done compared to each other, like, who's the better stash right now? It's looking like Khalil Shakir, and he could be a really juicy stash based on how the offseason plays out. So that was one of the things I noticed from this game. Obviously the game was interesting. You know, you talk about the Bills and the Dolphins. We could talk all day about that Trent Sherfield touchdown and how it just happened to fall in his hands. Like, just ridiculous. But Khalil Shakir is somebody I have my eye on 100%, especially this next week. If Gabe Davis can't go, I want to see if he kind of establishes himself a little bit, especially in a big spot in a playoff game.
100%, man. This is going to be a huge opportunity for him. And yeah, I think the playoffs are going to kind of determine what the Bills do at wide receiver, because I can see the Bills being a type of team, like with the Chiefs, like, that don't bring in another bona fide wide receiver, right? Even though there is a clear need there. But, you know, got to pay attention to Khalil Shakir, you know, depending on what they do in the offseason. Devon Achane, he's leapt into my dynasty top 10 after this season, and he might move up after this week. The Chiefs are allowing the fourth highest yards per carry to running backs, and forget rookies, okay? Achane has the highest yards per carry for any running back with 100 or more carries in a season in NFL history. The only names you recognize near the top of this list is Jim Brown and Jamal Charles, all right? Yards after contact per attempt this year, number one, okay? Number three in missed tackles forced per attempt this year. Number one in breakaway percentage. Sixth in yards after the catch per reception among qualifying running backs. Achane plus this run scheme from Mike McDaniel is like a match made in heaven. You look at Raheem Mostert, amazing year. But this dude is turning 32 in April. Okay, the wheels are going to fall off at some point. You know, will they pay him his $2.3 million or will they just take the dead cap hit of $600K? I can see him leaving. Jeff Wilson, similar situation, just a little younger. If I had to guess, like maybe one of these guys comes back, but I can see them adding another back to complement Achane, you know, for the future. But I can't imagine Achane not being the 1A at the very least, no matter what they do in this backfield next year. Like, this dude is a baller.
Yeah. Bottom line, and I do think it's funny how we're calling it. It's a lot more difficult to say that the wheels are going to fall off for Raheem Mostert after he has a 20-touchdown season, you know, 21
touchdowns. I know.
We were saying that easily earlier than the offseason coming into the season. We're like, oh, he's 31, you know, the wheels are going to fall off. This is easy. You know, he doubled his total touchdowns, career total in touchdowns in one season. It's pretty hilarious. But I love that you have Achane.
This is like the outlier of outlier season that Raheem Mostert just had. Right, yeah. Like these type
especially
of seasons
with Achane
don't
in the backfield.
Happen. It's not like he's Derrick Henry. This dude's not built like Derrick Henry. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at Derrick Henry, and you're like, all right, I can see that. I understand that. Even though, you know, we thought the wheels were going to fall off with him, right? He's not going to be on the Titans next year. Yeah. He already gave his goodbye speech, you know, to the crowd after the game.
That was weird. I didn't expect that. That was one of the interesting.
It seemed like seems like pretty clear that they're parting ways. But yeah, no, I think
at least it's on good terms.
But you mentioned Mostert, like, yeah, it's just this type of situation does not happen often.
And if
you think that it's going to happen again next year, just like now you're take your money,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And leave. Okay, don't double down.
Yeah, doubling down would not be a good idea. And it's funny. Like I said, I'll get to Achane in just a second, but you mentioned Derrick Henry. It's like for Derrick Henry, a guy like Raheem Mostert, you can see the wheels falling off. But with Derrick Henry, it's like the difference between 240 pounds running at you, 250 pounds running at you at 20 miles an hour versus maybe 18 or 17 as he gets older. Like, not that big a difference. You're still going to get so hammered by him regardless of what happens. But I love that you have Achane inside the top 10. He makes my top 10 as well. I put him even over a guy like Saquon Barkley. That's a discussion for another day. But there aren't questions with Achane as far as is he talented enough or is he going to be the clear lead back in the offense. The efficiency numbers that you just mentioned, they speak for themselves. And when you're that efficient, it doesn't matter if you're getting a good workload or an elite bell cow workload. That's going to be enough for him to get what he needs to do done, you know, as a fantasy running back. That's definitely going to be the best case scenario for Achane moving forward in his career to get somebody else in the backfield. I don't care who's complimenting him. He's still going to be the guy. You know, he's going to be the 1A, like you mentioned. Doesn't matter if it's Mostert. Doesn't matter if it's Jeff Wilson. And it's funny because in my notes, I mentioned Derrick Henry. I said next season, doesn't matter if it's Derrick Henry complimenting Achane. He's going to be the most productive back in the backfield next year and moving forward as long as he can stay healthy. And for those of you who want it to be the Achane show, you know, you want him to be a bell cow, I'm sure there are a couple of us out there. Like, we saw that more volume for a hyper-efficient player isn't always the answer this season with Tony Pollard. All those metrics you mentioned earlier, yak per attempt, he was second in 2022, seventh in missed tackles forced per attempt, seventh in yards per route run in 2022 for Pollard. You know, he was Mr. Efficiency in those categories, and he gets the lion's share of work this season, and suddenly his efficiency just comes kind of crashing back down to earth. So Achane isn't built to be a bell cow. That's fine. He doesn't have to be. I think that's ultimately going to keep him out of the top five dynasty running back discussion at any point in his career, but he absolutely deserves consideration as top 10 right now. But let me throw this one at you, you know, before we move on. Rashad White, between him and Achane, you know, who are you taking in dynasty right now? Like, I think I might lean White by a hair just because I think his situation's locked up with him as a clear lead back, and he's looked a lot better this season than he did last season, so it's promising. But I'm interested to see where you weigh in there because they're pretty close in my rankings.
Yeah, I'm going Achane pretty easily, I would say. yes, is Rashad White kind of locked in his role right now? Yeah, I think so. Am I fully convinced that he's going to be the workhorse next year? I'm not. I can see a situation based on the lack of efficiency this year in the run game. And also, you know, he caught a lot of passes this year and he's been really good, but like he hasn't been overly efficient, and he's actually been inefficient in the ground game once again. I was just looking into his numbers actually this morning because I wanted to kind of compare him to like other running backs historically. And, you know, the raw numbers were there. The production was there. But he didn't shine in the run game in terms of like on a per touch basis, per carry basis, per snap basis. This doesn't scream a situation where the Bucs won't add another running back to this backfield. And I think they will. If I had to guess, he held it down. He stayed healthy all year long, which was awesome. But I think that this is a situation where people might be a little bit surprised, like come draft day, right? Where they're like, wait, hold on a second. Like, you had Kenneth Walker. Why are you adding Zach Charbonnet? Right? Well, guess what?
Right.
Kenneth Walker, he also had some issues in the run game last year. Okay. And now everybody talks about it, right? North, south versus east, west, right? Like, we talk about that now. But
yeah,
I was talking about that last year. Even though Kenneth Walker, when he was coming out, he was like my favorite running back. I liked him more than Breece Hall in terms of like, I just liked watching him play, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, and it's a concern. So when these type of things come out, I like to pay attention to them. And you know, based on efficiency, I would say I would go Achane, just more explosive and just more of a playmaker, I would say.
And I guess it would be safe to say you like the offense more too. I think I could see that argument maybe.
Yeah, like, you know, it's like, and the yards per carry thing with Achane, you know, that's not a stat that I attribute to like a running back. It's a stat that I attribute to the running back plus the situation they're in. And since the run scheme is going to be the same next year, same coach, right? I can kind of translate that to next year, opposed to a running back that had 5.6 yards per carry is in a different situation the year after. And it's like that can completely change. But what can stay constant is the yards after contact, the missed tackles forced, you know, that sort of thing. Like the skill set can potentially stay the same.
Yeah. I hear you on that 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it's close though. Let me see where I actually, let me check where I have White. It's not. It's,
I know where you have White. I posed the question.
I haven't met 11.
Yeah, exactly.
Met 11. So high. It's so high.
I posed the question for you that way because, you know, obviously not everybody listening is going to see the rankings or anything like that. So I just wanted to see how you would respond. It seems like there's a pretty big gap there, though, from 10 to 11, you know, the way that you just described it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Achane has his flaws, too. You know,
they're different, and I think types of running backs.
You know, 100%. Yeah, different types of running backs. You know, he wasn't overly efficient in the receiving game. You know, on a per route basis. All on top of that, you know, he wasn't necessarily. Is he going to be staying into pass block? Is he going to get that passing down role, or is it just going to be an early down? Hey, you're my efficient early down running back, right? Like, is that's a possibility, and is that enough for him to move the needle for fantasy, right? Because like we would love for a back like that. A small back like that to get 4 or 5 receptions a game. Is that going to happen? So that is kind of, you know, that's why I do have him below Saquon Barkley in my rankings, in my dynasty rankings. You know, so that's kind of where I'm at there. But listen, love Achane. Crack the top 10. And by the way, guys, our dynasty rankings have been updated. Go check it out. upperhandfantasy.com. They're all there. Okay. Let's talk Texans. Big win against the Colts. Yeah. To win the division, CJ Stroud coming through as a rookie. They get a home game now against the Browns. Really, really great accomplishment by him and that team. A young rookie against an old man at quarterback this week. I don't even know who to root for here. But I think I'm leaning towards Stroud. Like it's for me personally, like I like to see these young like rookies succeed and defy the odds and like make it past the first round of the playoffs in their first year, especially because Stroud's a baller. You know, he made my guy CJ Stroud and my guy Tank Dell like just ballers. Love it. I love him for that. So I just want him to just succeed. I want him to win the Super Bowl. But he's another guy who's a clear top 10 dynasty quarterback for me at this point. And I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, 100%. There's no question about C.J. Stroud being a top 10 quarterback. But the Texans-Colts game, you talked about the Bills-Dolphins game being a playoff game. Like, the Texans-Colts game felt like a playoff game. You know, that was one. Obviously, it's easy to say that because it was winning, you're in, and you lose, and you're out. That's just how it worked. But that felt like a true playoff game. It was awesome because it was close. You know, it wasn't one way or the other. And the team that I wanted to win won. I think the team that everybody wanted to win won with C.J. Stroud. I wish the matchup between the Browns and the Texans would happen later in the playoffs, because I don't want to see any of the either of these teams be first round exits. Like, how could you not root for Joe Flacco and the Browns with all the quarterback drama that they've had this year? How could you not root for C.J. Stroud and the Texans? You know, like you just mentioned, I'm going to be making my wild card picks again, like I did last season, later this week. This is easily going to be one of the most difficult ones to pick. I'm not going to put myself on the board here just yet for this game, but C.J. Stroud is easily a top 10 dynasty quarterback. And I figured this would be the case. I was a big fan of him coming out of the draft, but I didn't think we'd be having this conversation about him as a top 10 guy with the Texans in the playoffs in his rookie season. Like, I thought it would take a year or two, but obviously that's not been the case. C.J. Stroud's come out. He's been fantastic. Not much analysis necessary with him. You know, young quarterback immediately being not only fantasy relevant, but also a game changer in certain weeks. Like, not many quarterbacks you want to build your fantasy team around over Stroud, especially in a dynasty startup. If you want to play the long game, you know, if you're one of those people who wants to play the long game dynasty, you know, build up that capital and the value long term, like C.J. Stroud, he is your guy. You know, he's a fantastic pick in dynasty.
He's my QB7 right now. He's still behind Justin Herbert. He's still behind Joe Burrow, because we have a bigger sample size, and they're not old guys yet. But we'll see, man. You never know. You know, pull up another season like this next year, you know, he could improve. You never know. He might be a top five quarterback for me next year.
Another guy that I like, just quick, I'm just going to throw this out there. Like, same division, Anthony Richardson. I know he had a very small sample size. I know he's injured, but like, that's somebody that I'm really on.
It doesn't matter. He's my QB8. He's right behind him for me, dude. Like,
who do you think has a better chance of like jumping into the top three between C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson? And I don't want to just like glaze Anthony Richardson here, but I'm just going to say, like, I think if you had to pick one, I would go with Anthony Richardson based on what we've seen with Shane Steichen, quarterback, like, come on.
He would have to be in the conversation. He would have to be in the conversation with Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, no, I think it could happen, you know, more so because, like, what's the chance that C.J. Stroud gets up there? Now, if C.J. Stroud comes out and throws 45 touchdowns in his second year, like similar to what Patrick Mahomes did, right? Because Patrick Mahomes' second year was just bonkers, right? So, I mean, not second year, second year starting, I should say.
Even
first year starting, which is bonkers. But like, just overall, like, you know, if he has a season like that, you know, you can see it. But yeah, Richardson, if he just continued doing what he was doing early on this year, he might have been ranked over C.J. Stroud. He might have been ranked over Justin Herbert.
He might have been ranked in the top three, just in general, like we talked about. Like, because the pace he was
on his way.
Yeah, he had four touchdowns on the ground in three games. And he also had, I think it was three or four touchdowns through the air. And he only played a quarter of the one game where he had 17 fantasy points. So it's like, come on. Like, Anthony Richardson, if he just stays healthy, it'll be huge.
And they were not tush pushing, because he doesn't need a push.
No, no, no. Right.
He doesn't need a push.
No, he is the push.
He is the push.
Yes.
All right. Can we talk about Nico Collins' breakout year for a second, please? Okay. I'm finding it a little tough to rank him in Dynasty. But as of now, he's my wide receiver 22. So check this out. Tyreek Hill, number one in yards per route run among all wide receivers with at least 100 targets. You know who is number two?
Nico Collins. Yeah.
Nico Collins, number two in the NFL. Minimum 100 targets per route run. Are you kidding me? Dude, let's go. You know what I'm saying? So Tank Dell and Nico Collins, believe it or not, they're the same age. All right. You know, just remember, Tank was at the Senior Bowl last year. Okay. He defied all the odds. Like, you know, an older, smaller wide receiver. Okay. That's like two things that like don't go together in fantasy football. But he defied all the odds. You know, he looks special. But, you know, we can't underestimate Nico's year. He's attached to C.J. Stroud for at least one more year, like for sure. He's an impending free agent in 2025. Maybe they franchise him. I can also see him getting locked up because they have Tank on a cheap rookie deal. right? So, you know, I'd love for the Texans to keep him past 2024, but that's a question mark. We know that Tank Dell is locked up until 2026, and we know that he's going to be attached to CJ Stroud. But the Texans, like, if I were the Texans, like, they don't have a need at wide receiver. Like, I don't see them drafting one early. I wouldn't. If I were them, I would fill other holes. So I think these two are pretty much locked in as the guys going into 2024. But yeah, if the Texans end up extending Nico, I think wide receiver 22 might be too low.
Yeah. So the way you're talking about Nico Collins as the wide receiver 22 makes it seem like that threat of him leaving Houston next offseason is already kind of baked in to that wide receiver 22 spot. A little bit. Right. Yeah. I think that's what it seems like to me. You know, if the Texans got a head start, and this is just hypothetically, say the Texans got a head start and they extended Nico this offseason, like, where would he go? Where would Nico Collins be if he was then tied?
Oh, man.
They signed him to a 3-year deal. Something
he
like
might
that.
Be in the teen. He's going to move up in the teens, man. You know, it's tough to move him over certain guys, though. Like, yeah. I'll probably move him ahead of, actually, he's 21 for me right now, but I might move him ahead of, it's tough, man, because I would have to move him ahead of guys like T. Higgins. I would have to, you know, Debo's there, Jalen Waddle's there. You know, it's tough to, like,
yeah,
Jalen Waddle, I have Waddle relatively low compared to a lot of people, but I have like guys like Drake London and DJ Moore ahead of him. So like, it's tough, man. We're getting to like that, you know, that elite wide receiver status where it's just like, he's like right at that cusp, you know, cause we only have 1 year, but boy, did this 1 year look special, man. Like big plays, Nick, you know, looking down the field, like he's just a beast. So it's looking pretty good for Nico Collins moving forward though. Still young wide receiver, 24 years old, is looking good.
I think that if they did sign him, it wouldn't be that drastic of a change. You know, I think because Tank Dell is there, I wouldn't move him up that high either. Right. You know, he would move up a little bit, but I don't think I'd move him up past some of those guys that you mentioned. You know, Stroud can definitely support both of them, but as long as Nico isn't the true wide receiver one on the team, you know, it's going to be hard to put him over wide receiver 14 or 15. And that's probably right where you were just talking about, you know, kind of moving him in. It might be even a little bit higher.
Yeah, it's too high. Talk about. It's too high. Too high.
Yeah, he wouldn't make it past there is what I'm trying to say. But, you know, obviously, one of the biggest fantasy movers, you know, in dynasty football this offseason, and it starts with CJ Stroud. And if he would happen to go somewhere else after 2024, you know, I'd definitely be a little bit hesitant, you know, just with him being away from CJ Stroud, because we haven't seen that. And we have seen that in sample sizes with guys like Davis Mills, and it just hasn't been very good. So, yeah, right. Definitely hesitant. If he stays in Houston, you're fine. But outside of that, it's like you might be on shaky ground.
The good thing now, though, is that offensive coordinators know what they got in Nico Collins at this point, right? So, like, even if he moves elsewhere, it's like, oh, we can build our passing game around this guy, you know, opposed to last year where I guess they might not have known that or figured that out because they were incompetent. All right, we have a few more games to talk about here. The Packers ended up getting the win, securing their playoff spot, but they have to go into Dallas. Not great. You know, the way the Cowboys have been playing at home over the last two seasons, you know, it's looking like the Cowboys might have this in the bag. But this year has been a very pleasant surprise for Jordan Love. Top 10 in passing yards, second in passing touchdowns, only to Dak Prescott. 32-11, touchdown to interception ratio. Pretty good. And overall, this year has been pretty good for him, especially considering his weapons all over the place, right? Aaron Jones in and out of the lineup all year. Christian Watson barely showed up this year. Romeo Dubs took a step back. These young wide receivers, though, Jaden Reed came through big time. Huge rookie year. Tight ends showed up, the rookie tight ends. Dontayvion Wicks, you know, towards the end of the year, he's looking like a pretty good wide receiver. He's showing that he's capable. This is going to be a tough test for them in Dallas, man. How do you, like, are you looking at this game like a challenge for the Cowboys?
Yeah, I am. And I'm just going to limit my comments on this game overall because I don't want to just go into this and say that, oh, Dallas is 16-0 at home since week one of 2022. And you also have to remember that the Packers are 5-0 all the time at AT&T Stadium. You know, it's just like there's all sorts of things working against each other. It's Mike McCarthy's old team. It's like something's got to give. I'm not looking forward to it. I am really excited to see how this game goes because, you know, the Packers, they're a really interesting team because they're so young, you know. It's just ridiculous. Like the way that, and I'm just going to go back. This is off my notes, but I have to mention this because I thought about this now. Look at the weapons that Jordan Love is playing with. You know, Dontayvion Wicks, Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed's good. You know, obviously he was a second round pick. Good for him. But Dontayvion Wicks out of nowhere. Bo Melton. Who's Bo Melton? Tucker Kraft. Luke Musgrave. The running backs have been injured all year. Like, is Aaron Rodgers putting up 32-11 and staying quiet about it the whole time? If he's still in Green Bay, like, think about that. Like,
hot take.
I don't
hot
think take. That's the case.
Aaron Rodgers would not have thrown 32 touchdowns this year with that supporting cast.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think it would have been a lot more complaining, a lot more, you know, talking on Pat McAfee's show like he's doing. And I don't want to just trash Aaron Rodgers. He's very good. But he kind of got a little whiny in 2022. And now in 2023, you look at what Jordan Love is doing with an arguably worse supporting cast. You know, he didn't have week after week after week of Christian Watson, you know, coming on, that kind of thing. Like, just something to throw out there. It's something that I just thought about. But like I said, I'm not going to make any bulletin board material here. Jordan Love has absolutely crushed it this season. The Packers offense in general. Jordan Love and Jaden Reed were just lottery picks, you know, at their respective positions coming into the season. And they've flown up dynasty draft boards this season. And honestly, it doesn't just stop at those two guys. You know, Jordan Love playing really well means a lot for the pass catchers in this offense. Jaden Reed, obviously. But Christian Watson, you know, Dontavian Wickses of the world, the Tucker Crafts even. But Jordan Love just played his first full season, like I just mentioned, at quarterback with pass catchers all younger than he is. And he's 25 years old, Jordan Love. So since week 7, and this might surprise some people, Jaden Reed was the wide receiver 14 in PPR points per game. Cool. But over the last 3 weeks of the season, Jordan Love had Jaden Reed as a wide receiver 7 in PPR points per game. Dontavian Wicks was a wide receiver 14 in points per game. And Bo Melton was a wide receiver 17 in points per game. Jordan Love is elevating the supporting cast. I don't care what anybody says. You know, the whole Packers offense is on the way up in Dynasty. Obviously, it would be a little presumptuous to jump out and say that all of these young wide receivers are going to make it in the Packers offense. But you look at Romeo Doubs, the guy that was there before, it's like he hasn't been a factor at all. Christian Watson is in and out of the lineup all the time. Like, clearly, these guys that Jordan Love is throwing to, they're not just guys. They're doing pretty good for what the situation that they're in. I think Jaden Reed is pretty much earmarked at this point as one of the players with very high appreciation potential. And Dontavian Wicks, I think he's a flyer at this point. You know, you can take a flyer on him and see how it goes. But Romeo Doubs, I don't know what to do with him. Like, if you have him, like, in just his second year in the league, he feels like a relic of times past. So this offense in Green Bay is really interesting because suddenly they have, like, all of these players who look decent at the worst, decent quality guys. So they have too much volume, too much stuff, not enough space. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what's going to happen with these Packers pass catchers, but I'm excited to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, they could definitely use a true number one on the outside. I think a true number one on the outside, Christian Watson as a field stretcher, and then Jaden Reed come out the slot. Like, that's a pretty good, that's a dynamic wide receiver trio right there. And then just bring in another running back. They need another running back. Aaron Jones is not it anymore. He can't stay healthy. AJ Dillon is not it. So they need to move on.
Yeah.
They need to move on. Okay.
Absolutely.
I personally can't wait for the Lions-Rams game. Like, it's going to be played indoors. It's going to be an offensive bonanza. Now, here's the kicker, though. The interesting thing is this. Like, this is not a great matchup for Kyron Williams, right? So I'm interested to see what happens here. Like, do they overcome that? And Kyron can he still be productive on the ground? Or will the Rams have to be forced to be a little bit one-dimensional, which is something they haven't had to do much of since Kyron got back, right? And, you know, when you think about it, that's really when they had their success, you know, with Kyron back in the lineup, right? So we'll see. But, you know, the thing is that Lions are, you know, very, very susceptible in the back end, right? Like, they're not, they can't defend wide receivers. I think Puka and Cooper Kupp can both go off. You know, even, you know, our boy DeMarcus Robinson, like, absolutely killing it, like, every single week the last, like, 8 weeks. Our boy, our boy. You know what I'm saying? Guy. Like, he's getting it done. Okay, so I think this will be interesting, man. I think this is going to be a good game, though. It could be a lot of fireworks. I can see this game going over for sure.
Yeah, 100% it should go over. And like you mentioned, it's indoors. And I think there's a lot of interesting storylines here in this game, too, outside of just the fantasy football storyline about Kyron Williams versus a good run defense. But Matthew Stafford going back to Detroit, like, that's just poetic. But then also Jared Goff facing his own team. I don't think there's a whole lot of people talking about that just because it's overshadowed with Matthew Stafford, you know, obviously going back to face his old team. I think the NFC matchups played out pretty well in terms of Super Wild Card. Like, the matchups that we got, I'm cool with it in terms of storylines and the value that they have in terms of, you know, the history, significance, like, really interesting matchups. It's good. But yeah, as far as Kyron Williams goes, I think if there's a running back that's going to overcome a tough matchup, it's probably going to be him, because he did the same thing against the Ravens. He had a solid game. It wasn't earth shattering, but he had a solid game, and the Ravens are a good run defense. So I don't want to just write him off, but I think if anybody's going to have a big day, it's going to be Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp. And if I had to pick between one of them two, you know, I think it would be Puka Nacua. And I don't think it's really close, because at this point, he is the wide receiver one. Cooper Kupp is good, but I think he's Puka Nacua now has a clear edge over him, where a couple weeks ago, we might not have been having that conversation, because that's when Cooper Kupp was kind of coming back on, if you remember.
And by the way, Puka has broken Jamar Chase's rookie receiving yards record, as well as Jalen Waddle's rookie reception record as well. So he, you know, this season that has begun with Puka ended with Puka as well. And now I don't think we've talked about one single player this year more than we talked about Puka. There's no way. I think Puka was number one. Like, if you have to pick like a trending topic from all of our podcasts, Puka was the guy.
Yeah. I don't know. we put out a couple Puka posts. So the first one, we put one out like yesterday, I think it was, about his, you know, breaking the records or whatever. And then we had the Fantasy Awards post go out on our Instagram, you know, a couple of days before that. And Puka won two of them. And I forget, somebody was in the comments. I forget exactly who it was. I would totally shout him out, you know, if I remember who it was. But they were like, seriously, like, you guys are still talking about Puka? It's like, yes, this is like, we haven't seen this type of rookie season, you know, in history, pretty much. You know, obviously we saw Jamar Chase break some records. Justin Jefferson did it a couple of years before that. But they were first round picks. Like, Puka Nacua is a guy that was fifth round pick. Nobody was expecting anything from him. And now he's back on the map. So I think it's warranted when we talk about him this much.
100%. He's breaking records, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And we got to give the fantasy awards out. But remember, early on in the year, when we were talking about Puka, like, you know, he started doing his thing. And it's like, okay, well, what do we do with Puka? Do we start him every week? Yeah, I think by week three, he's like, all right, I guess we got to start him every week. Week four, All right, what's going to happen when Cooper Kupp is back? What do we do? Like, do we trade him? Do we not? Like, do we keep him? What do we do? And then Cooper Kupp's back. It's like, oh, look, Puka. You know, his target share went up. Oh, okay. Like, and we just kept talking about him, like, over and over. And then he'll have a monster game, and then you have to talk about him again. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, it is what it is.
The situation kind of lended itself to talking about him all the time, because it was changing all the time, but he was still doing his thing. So that was totally worth talking about.
I will say this. He's my dynasty wide receiver 9 at this point. He's obviously, I think he deserves to be in the top 10 at this point. I couldn't put him over Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson just yet. But, you know, he could get there. But, you know, right now, Puka's that dude. Okay. And if he's going to be with Sean McVay forever, then, like, you know, he might have to be up there, right?
He might be a little ahead of ourselves there, saying he's going to be with Sean McVay forever. But, like, in an ideal world, he would be.
Yeah. That's what you want for every wide receiver. Can we talk about our new undisputed Dynasty tight end 1, Sam Laporta? Breaking records out here. 86 catches as a rookie tight end. That's the most among rookie tight ends all time. Number one. Okay. That's 12 more catches than number two, by the way. Okay. He's third all time in receiving yards as a rookie. Kyle Pitts is number one, by the way. And he's tied with Gronk for the most touchdowns in a season by a rookie tight end. And the most important stat of them all, number one all time in fantasy points per game among rookie tight ends. Okay. So dude's a baller. Yep. Unfortunately, he might not be tied to Ben Johnson for too much longer, but it doesn't matter. He's going to be a very good player for a very long time and has now overtaken the dynasty tight end ranks.
Yes. 100% on the money with this one. And it can't be anyone else. Like, I get it. Trey McBride's cool. He's not scoring touchdowns like Laporta. Mark Andrews does still exist, and I think he could challenge Laporta in 2024, maybe 2025 if he's healthy, you know, as a tight end one. You know, I think in those two seasons, if he stays healthy with Lamar Jackson, we could see Mark Andrews challenge Laporta. But in terms of long term, you're talking dynasty. Like, Laporta did things in his rookie season that we haven't seen before. Like you mentioned, like, he had the receptions record. He's got his whole career ahead of him, which hopefully will be 10 plus productive years, you know, hopefully. But he's off to an absolutely ridiculous start. And the most impressive thing to me about his season, he had 10 touchdowns, right? He caught 10 touchdowns this season on a team that had Jahmyr Gibbs scored 11 times, David Montgomery scored 13 times, and Amon-Ra St. Brown scored 10 times. So, like, this is a prime situation where, like, a rookie tight end, like, rookie tight ends tend to just get bodied out of the target distribution. That didn't happen with Laporta. He's actually the number two target in the passing game. So, like, he's obviously going to continue to be a big part of what they're doing. Not sure what this injury is that he has. They say he has an outside chance to play this week. Honestly, I wouldn't play him, you know, especially if you want to have him for the rest of the way. You know, he's a big part of the offense, but also if you're looking to make a run, you don't want to put him out there, have him get re-injured, and it's just guaranteed that he's out. So for me, it's tough. You know, obviously not. We might not see him play this weekend, but obviously Dynasty tight end one. It has to be Sam Laporta. It can't be anybody else.
Are the Eagles collapsing before our eyes, Zach? What's happening here? I think they ended up slowly taking their starters out of the game last week once they realized the Cowboys were going to win their game. But still, like, they did not start that game out against the Giants in a good way at all. The Giants were going to beat their starters, okay? A.J. Brown got hurt. Thankfully, he seems to be okay. He had that knee injury. We're still waiting on a prognosis, but it doesn't seem too serious. But they lost to the Cardinals the week before. They just haven't been playing well lately, man, for the last, like, you know, five or six games. And now they're going up against a Bucs team in Tampa who have won five of their last six games, you know, not against the best teams. Okay. So I got to let you guys know about that. But
lots of NFC South sprinkled in there.
Right. Exactly. Right. And, you know, I still think the Eagles win the game because, like, it's a good matchup for the Eagles offense. But, like, but I can see Mike Evans and Chris Godwin also tearing up Philly secondary. But we'll preview this game on Thursday. Like, we're going to be doing all of that. And also Zach's going to be giving his picks as well. But, you know, what's going on with the Eagles right now?
I think that there are a lot of problems, but I think they're fixable, you know, within a week to at least buy them a playoff win against the Buccaneers. I don't know if these issues are going to be fixed and it's going to carry them to divisional into the, what's called championship round or the Super Bowl or anything like that. But I think that they have problems that are fixable that can get them at least a win against the Buccaneers. Now, I'm just going to touch on A.J. Brown quick before I keep going forward. Anytime you see a wide receiver or any player go down with a knee injury on MetLife Field, like, it irks you a little bit. It's like, we've seen this before. We've seen this story before. It's like, you don't want that to happen. Luckily, it seems like he did avoid major injury. But of all the teams that the Eagles could be matched up against, I think this is best case scenario for them. The Buccaneers defense isn't bulletproof. We saw them struggle against the Panthers. They won 9-0. I think the most important thing for the Eagles to get back to if they want a chance to win is to get A.J. Brown the ball. Obviously, could be a bit more difficult now that he's a little dinged up. Not sure if he's going to play. Hopefully he does. But that's a correction they need to make on offense. Dallas did it with CeeDee Lamb. Surprise, surprise. Dallas' offense is firing on all cylinders. They start getting him the ball. Suddenly things are working. They also need to get back to basics on defense. That includes using Haason Reddick as an edge rusher and not an off-ball linebacker. There's been a bunch of film floating around of him just floating around in coverage. Don't know why they're using him there, but that makes no sense. Those are two simple changes, I think, that can turn things around for Philly, you know, especially just on Super Wild Card weekend, you know, going into the game this weekend. But that game against the Giants was just awful. Like, by midway through the second quarter, it felt like it was out of reach. And I agree with Sirianni's decision to pull the starters at that point. It's obviously no fun to have yourself. You just have to roll over and die against a team that has nothing to play for, especially at a point in the game where, you know, they were pulling starters and the Cowboys-Commanders game was still close, you know, if you're going to say that. I think by the time they had all their starters out, it was only 14-10 in favor of the Cowboys, but then they double-dipped at the end of the first half and beginning of the second half, and the game was just out of reach then. But Philly was just getting beat up by the Giants. So it's pretty crazy to say in 2024.
Yeah, man, it really is. So, we obviously have a lot of Dynasty stuff to talk about. We have a lot of time to talk about it. We have our Dynasty kit coming out in March 1st. On March 1st, we have the Senior Bowl coming up. We have a lot going on. So, obviously still a lot of football to go. Playoffs are here. It's going to be fun. We'll see you guys later this week. Take it easy. Bye-bye.